This episode of Nigerian American includes content that may not be suitable for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised. Here's a story from a Nollywood movie. Main plot of the movie. A rich man who physically abuses his wife and sexually abuses his daughter moves his new girlfriend into the house to live with the family. He beats up his wife and daughter on multiple occasions for disrespecting his new girlfriend. One day out of anger, he kicked his wife and daughter out of the house and threw out their belongings. They ended up on the streets and somehow they became street beggars. A few months passed and then one day, the daughter met a stranger while begging for money. After handing her a wad of cash, the stranger offered her a high-paying job at his company. She accepted. Months later, he called her into his office and asked her to marry him, and again, she accepted. After a few weeks of their marriage, he died in an accident and somehow had left her as the sole beneficiary of his empire. Meanwhile, things weren't going so well for her father. The new girlfriend for whom he kicked out his family had not only spent all of his money, she had also left him for one of his richer friends. Things got so bad for him and he eventually lost everything, and in a twist of fate, he became homeless and ended up a beggar at the same exact spot where his daughter and wife used to beg. One day, his wife and daughter on their way to give food to the beggars, they spotted him. And when he saw them, he knelt down and begged for their forgiveness. His daughter's pastor happened to be driving by and he also stopped when he noticed the scene. The pastor and the wife both asked the daughter to forgive the man for everything he had ever done. "After all, he's still your father," said the pastor. "God commands us to honor our parents. Do you wish to disobey the Lord?" She eventually agreed, hugged him, and then they drove him home to their new house. Screen fades to black. Text appears on screen, in quotes, "To God be the glory," end of quote. Roll credits. The end. Welcome to a new season of Nigerian American. My name is LD. This is my podcast. So this summer, my wife's grandmother came over to the U.S. to spend some time with us. We hadn't seen her since she last visited in the summer of 2017. Granny, as we call her, is the most agile great-grandmother you know. She wakes up before everyone and she loves to do chores. I don't know anyone who loves to do chores as much as Granny does. There's a dishwasher, but Granny would rather do the dishes by hand. There's a vacuum cleaner, but she brings along traditional Nigerian brooms on every trip, and she prefers to use those to sweep the entire house. And if you dare try to stop her, she'll wrestle you, literally. Now, Granny lives in the UK, and she's quite tech-savvy for her age. She uses a touchscreen smartphone with such ease. I wake up to a WhatsApp prayer message from her every morning. She's also figured out how to watch Nigerian movies, aka Nollywood movies, on YouTube. So in her spare time, she likes to watch Nollywood movies, especially the Yoruba ones. Outside of immediate family in the UK, it's probably the only opportunity she gets to immerse herself in the culture she left behind decades ago. She figured from her last visit that she could use the Roku TV device in our family room downstairs to watch Nigerian movies on YouTube. So whenever she got a little bit bored, she'd sit down and watch a couple movies. I work out of my home office most days of the week. I sometimes go downtown for some FaceTime with my teams, but I prefer to work from home because it's a 50-minute commute to the city. So whenever I take a break from sitting at my desk, sometimes I go sit with Granny just to keep her company. And if she happened to be watching a movie, you know, I'd sit with her and watch. I'm a fan of Nigeria's Nollywood. I witnessed that industry go from nothing to becoming the third largest film industry in the world. It was around the same time we were developing what is globally known today as the Afrobeats music genre in the late 90s. Anyway, hanging out with Granny this summer, I had the rare opportunity of watching many Nollywood movies that I otherwise may not have come across. In the past, I only saw big titles like The Wedding Party, October 1, The CEO, 30 Days in Atlanta, and such. Watching movies with Granny this summer really helped me catch up on the not-so-popular Nollywood titles. Granny prefers to watch the newest releases, and because of that, I was able to experience present-day Nollywood. It helped me appreciate the growth of the industry from a production value standpoint. Cinematography looks much better. Audio production has improved. Lighting is way more professional. You can tell, you know, from watching the new movies that there are more professional hands on the production sets. The one thing that hasn't advanced much about Nollywood, however, is the storytelling. I feel like the storytelling got progressively worse over time, except for the big titles. You know, big titles like October 1, which are few and far between, have very talented writers and directors, and they figured out a way to intelligently tell Nigerian stories. What I mean by that is they have carefully thought out storylines and movie plots. The smaller titles, which happen to be the majority, however, not so much. Nollywood has a very unique storytelling and acting style. It's different from, you know, what you're used to if you grew up on Bollywood or Hollywood movies. And I don't mean that in a bad way. I mean different as in different. It's unique. You know, Bollywood is also very unique. So I appreciate that Nollywood has a signature. Watching all those movies with Granny this summer, I was really bothered by a lot of the movie plots and the storylines, the twists, and the general messages that Nollywood seems to be passing on to its audience. I know some folks are going to jump on me and immediately suggest that I can't compare Nollywood to the West, and that's not my goal here. I understand that a baby must learn to crawl and walk before running. However, I grew up in the early 80s before the Nollywood boom, so what I'm speaking of is a decline in some aspects of Nigerian film since then, not in comparison to any other film industry. In this episode, I want to discuss the consequence of being intentional and deliberate as a storyteller. A few months ago, I read an interview by Tom Chirac. He's the president of the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences, best known for their Academy Awards, also referred to as the Oscars. In the interview, Tom was being asked about the role of movies in society. He talked about how movies have over time become a powerful vehicle for culture, education, leisure, and propaganda. Film is a reflection of society, both present and past, he said. Movies can educate, he also said. They tell us things we could never have known about a people and their culture. Tom also mentioned in that interview that every country has stories to tell about their past, their culture now, and views of what the future would look like through their eyes. Basically, you can learn a lot about a people's culture from watching their movies. Members of a society also learn from the stories they're being told in their own movies. Stories help to reinforce cultural concepts and societal norms. They also teach specific lessons on fairness, equality, self-awareness, empathy, honesty, integrity, dedication, and so on. Modern storytelling is most efficiently done through motion pictures because movies can communicate concepts and ideas much better than any other art form. You know, movies allow us to be cognitively transported to a different time or a place and experience life through a different set of eyes. While immersed in the experience, we're able to gain new perspectives, you know, new inspiration, and acquire better understanding. Historically, even before film and cinema, storytelling has been the most efficient way to educate young generations about the history of the people and a way to teach and strengthen traditions and customs. Before film and cinema, societies told their stories to small audiences. You know, stories were also shared across cultures, but they didn't really have access to the size of audiences that we do today. A lot of storytelling was done in small community gatherings through stage plays or storytelling sessions to smaller audiences. Before the advent of microphones and loudspeaker technology, those stage plays could only accommodate the number of people that could hear the voice of the actors. The further away you were from the stage, the less likely that you'd hear the dialogue, and because of that, the audiences were even smaller. Compare that to today, where you have access to billions of people via the internet. Before modern technology became accessible, stories were told by elders or community leaders, or written with their strict guidance. Those days, story writing was intentionally structured to not only entertain, but to reach into the minds of its audience and teach some life lessons. The first set of books ever published were published with the same intention, to influence thoughts and behavior. I say all of that to highlight the fact that even before all of our technological advancements, our forefathers recognized the implications of deliberate storytelling. If a story was to be told at a festival or a community gathering, It needed to be entertaining, no doubt, but more importantly, it needed to send the right message to its audience. This is why most stories had to be shared with and vetted by the Council of Elders before the community had a chance to experience it. There's always been a deliberate effort by storytellers to be strategic. As a matter of fact, even when one doesn't intend to, or if your message isn't clear enough, your audience interprets the story as they see fit. To summarize, movies reflect the anxieties, beliefs, and values of the cultures that produce them. They also help to shape and solidify a culture's beliefs. Sometimes the influence of movies is trivial, however, sometimes the impact can be quite profound. In many parts of the world, movies have been used to drive social and political reform, and even the shaping of ideologies. Every storyteller is an influencer. Movies are motion picture depictions of stories, so movie writers are influencers. Your audience may not personally know you as a writer, but what you write influences their thoughts, behavior, beliefs, values, and traditions, and ultimately, you influence their culture. After the bombing of Pearl Harbor in 1941, which drew the U.S. into the Second World War in Europe, the government reached out to big producers in Hollywood to help with the war effort. They opened the Federal Bureau of Motion Picture Affairs in L.A. The Bureau's officials served in an advisory capacity on the production of war-related films, and as a result of that collaboration, films that were produced tended toward the patriotic and were produced to inspire feelings of pride and confidence in being American, and to clearly establish that America and its allies were the forces of good in the war. For instance, the critically acclaimed movie Casablanca paints a picture of the negative effects of fascism. It illustrates the values that heroes like Victor Laszlo hold, and depicts America as a place for refugees to find democracy and freedom. Early World War II films were sometimes overtly propagandists. They were intended to influence American attitudes towards the war. Frank Capra's Why We Fight films, for example, were developed specifically for the U.S. Army and later shown to general audiences. They delivered a deliberate war message, highlighting the need to intervene and the importance of protecting the rights to freedom and the fight against oppression. America's global identity is built around certain commonly held beliefs, which are often disseminated through and reinforced by media. In films like Bruce Willis's Die Hard, a single individual triumphs by standing up to injustice, reinforcing the belief that one person can make a difference in the world. In other films, action heroes such as Indiana Jones, Jack Bauer, Superman, Wonder Woman, and really most comic superheroes emphasize individualism. In films like Sylvester Stallone's Rocky series, the emphasis is on perseverance, patriotism, and honor. In films like Mel Gibson's The Passion of the Christ, the emphasis is on love, betrayal, and heroic sacrifice. Even in films like Scarface, where the lead character Tony Montana was a vicious drug-dealing murderer, the emphasis of the story is on loyalty and betrayal. One of the expectations of Hollywood storytelling, or really any reasonable storytelling for that matter, is that good always defeats evil. Even if sometimes it requires a lead character to make difficult choices like killing the bad guys, good always defeats evil. The impact of movies is rooted to our very core, both on an individual and a global level, whether it's direct or indirect. Cinema is paramount to our society's mental development. It's been shaping ideologies and forging the narratives of generations. In the 80s and early 90s, the early years of what became today's Nollywood, there were national TV shows in Nigeria like The New Masquerade, Cockcrow at Dawn, Bassey and Company, and The Village Headmaster. Now, watching those shows, it was easy to see that the writers were careful about their storytelling. At the time in Nigeria's history, inclusion and the tolerance of diversity was a recurring theme in most of the content produced for nationwide consumption. The Civil War, which ended in 1970, had raised lots of ethnic and religious tensions, and there was a need to tell a story of unity, forgiveness, and togetherness. The producers of most soap operas of that era made a very conscious effort to encourage the inclusion of Nigeria's ethnic diversity. The characters of most of the shows were of diverse origins, and even though each character brought along their cultural nuances, the message was always one of love, respect, tolerance, and acceptance. Whether it was a soap opera or comedy series, the writers were sure to embed each episode with subliminal teachings on love, loyalty, humanity, patriotism, and ethnic tolerance. There was also a children's TV show titled Tales by Moonlight, in which the writers told local folk tales from all over the country in form of children's stories. Every story was embedded with life lessons for its young audience. Some recurring topics were centered around integrity, honesty, truthfulness, hard work, perseverance, respect, discipline, empathy, compassion, and so on. By the late 90s, the technology for filmmaking was becoming more and more affordable, and the barrier to entry for filmmaking was significantly lowered, allowing many self-taught writers, producers, and directors to create independent content. You didn't need budgets that required much scrutiny from lenders to make a film anymore. With the advent of portable cameras and easily accessible non-linear video editing technology, all you needed was a camera or two, some basic lighting equipment, and a computer with some editing software. This is what led to the overnight growth of the movie industry in Nigeria. This and a couple other factors like, you know, media distribution channels is why Nollywood movies began to experience more and more success in the mid to late 90s. This was all also happening at a time when the country's laws were becoming less and less enforced due to widespread government corruption. Across many industries, laws were being circumvented, oftentimes by the custodians of institutions that were set up for enforcement. What it meant for the movie industry is that boards that were set up to censor movies became rent-seeking opportunities for some of its officials. Eventually, those board seats became political appointments, stripping the office of its required expertise. Professionals got replaced by allies of the ruling party rather than the most qualified people for the positions. This is the story of many of Nigeria's institutions. The consequence of this is that any storyline may pass through without much scrutiny, so long as it doesn't contain nudity or political narratives that demonize the ruling government. The Census Board is aware that movies can be used as a tool for propaganda, but they're only interested when it's propaganda against the ruling party. The nudity concern is more about morality, but the hypocrisy lies in the fact that many of the morals taught by a lot of the movies they allow to pass through the board cause far more harm to the society than the sight of naked human bodies. When Chimamanda's Half of a Yellow Sun was held back by the Census Board in 2014, the board released a statement saying the film is not banned, but that its release in Nigeria, I quote, has been delayed until the producers make certain changes, end of quote. The board explained further in the same statement that their decision was based on the movie's potential to, I quote, undermine national security, end of quote. If indeed the board saw the movie and determined it shouldn't have been released in Nigeria, it could be a sign that they're being efficient. However, if you watch many of the locally made titles that have been allowed by the same board to be released into the market, you'll see the hypocrisy. Some argue that the real motivation behind the board's censorship of Half of a Yellow Sun was to protect the reputation of certain political heavyweights in the country at the time. My point here is that in today's Nollywood, you can tell any kind of story, regardless of what messages are embedded within it and the effects that such messages have on the society at large. So long as it doesn't make the current government or political heavyweights look bad, you know, you're free to release it. On the website of the Nigerian Film and Video Censors Board, their mission reads, and I quote, to contribute to the positive transformation of the Nigerian society through censorship of film and video works, whilst balancing the need to preserve freedom of expression within the law and limit social harm caused by films, end of quote. The first part talks about contributing to, and I quote, the positive transformation of the Nigerian society, end of quote. In order to positively transform Nigeria, the institution ought to not only encourage but support storytellers that promote such transformation. An easy way to do this is to encourage movie makers who create content with stories that promote such values. And as gatekeepers, an even better way to do it is to discourage movie makers from creating content that does the opposite. The second part of their mission, I quote, the need to preserve freedom of expression within the law, end of quote, is very important. The goal here is to ensure that they don't stifle creativity as long as creatives are playing within the confines of the law. The third part to me is the interesting one. I quote, limit social harm caused by films, end of quote. This is my area of most concern on this episode. The social well-being of a people is highly dependent on what they feed their minds. If I directly or indirectly teach children that there's nothing wrong with doing drugs, I'm normalizing such behavior. I shouldn't be surprised by a culture of youth addiction. If I teach men and women to show concern for their fellow citizens, I'm doing the entire nation a service and helping to maintain the social well-being of the communities within it. The exponential result is that everyone is more inclined to look out for one another. If I teach and reinforce to people that hard work doesn't really pay off, I'll be discouraging hard work and ultimately encouraging behavior that can hurt the social well-being of the society, and I shouldn't be surprised by criminal behavior to get rich quick. If I teach people that it takes a miracle to become successful, I'm encouraging people to spend less time working and more time hoping and praying. So I shouldn't be surprised that everyone is spending all their time going from church to church seeking miracles. It shouldn't be surprising either that people are seeking miracles from other sources like, you know, psychics and shamans and what have you. My point here is, if movies have such a profound effect on society by helping to shape and solidify a culture's beliefs, shouldn't our storytellers and influencers spend more time being deliberate about the traditions that we reinforce within our stories? Shouldn't our censors board be a custodian of such values? Watching Nollywood movies this summer, I noticed some recurring themes. The number one theme across most of the Nollywood movies that I saw is that nobody knows tomorrow. Nobody knows tomorrow. This could be a true statement because we truly don't know what tomorrow brings. However, it is dangerous to repeatedly suggest to a society that us humans have absolutely no control over our lives and that luck plays a bigger part than anything we have control over. The result of people being constantly fed this ideology is that they don't value their own efforts and they begin to seek miracles and by any means necessary. This is why more and more people fall prey to faith healers, psychics, and fake prophets. The idea that no matter how hard you try, you still need luck, a blessing, or some spiritual advantage in order to accomplish anything causes people to hope and pray more than they're willing to work for anything. After all, it's not by my effort. I need to sow a seed in order to be blessed, in order for me to accomplish anything in life. So why bother trying to work for it if I can engage in, you know, rituals or fast and pray my way to success, right? The second most recurring theme is that money is everything. Money is everything. This is not a true statement. There's hardly ever any other purpose in the life of a Nollywood movie character than the goal of getting super rich. Not being comfortable, but getting super rich. In Nollywood, a wealthy person, regardless of how he acquired his riches, is portrayed as the most respected figure in the society. In fairness, some stories do portray ill-gotten wealth as possibly leading to negative consequences, but in most cases, to the audience, the benefits outweigh the negatives. The result of this ideology is self-evident. Get rich by any means necessary, because after you do, it won't really matter to anyone how you got it. You'll still be respected. It may seem ridiculous to anyone outside of Nigeria that a corrupt politician who gets convicted for money laundering and serves jail time in the UK can return home to Nigeria to a grand welcome. Hell, a leader of one of the most prominent political parties was sent to jail for corruption, and as soon as he was released, he was celebrated on the campaign trail of the then presidential aspirant who eventually won the election. There are no long-term consequences for ill-gotten wealth in modern Nigerian culture. No wonder fraud is an option for more young people today than ever before in Nigeria's history. The third most recurring theme I noticed of all the Nollywood movies I saw this summer, and probably the most disturbing one, is that bad guys win. Bad guys win? While it may be true in real life that some bad guys get away, This is not a lesson to teach to young people if the well-being of the society is important. Now, listen again to the story from the Nollywood movie I told in the beginning. From my experience this summer, I noticed that many Nollywood storytellers are guilty of these truly bizarre storylines. Main plot of the movie. A rich man who physically abuses his wife and sexually abuses his daughter moves his new girlfriend into the house to live with the family. He beats up his wife and daughter on multiple occasions for disrespecting his new girlfriend. One day out of anger, he kicked his wife and daughter out of the house and threw out their belongings. They ended up on the streets and somehow they became street beggars. A few months passed and then one day, the daughter met a stranger while begging for money. After handing her a wad of cash, the stranger offered her a high-paying job at his company. She accepted. Some months later, he called her into his office and asked her to marry him, and again, she accepted. After a few weeks of their marriage, he died in an accident and somehow had left her as the sole beneficiary of his empire. Meanwhile, things weren't going so well for her father. The new girlfriend for whom he kicked out his family had not only spent all of his money, she had also left him for one of his richer friends. Things got so bad for him, and he eventually lost everything, and in a twist of fate, he became homeless and ended up a beggar at the same exact spot where his daughter and wife used to beg. One day, his wife and daughter on their way to give food to the beggars, they spotted him, and when he saw them, he knelt down and begged for their forgiveness. His daughter's pastor happened to be driving by, and he also stopped when he noticed the scene. The pastor and the wife both asked the daughter to forgive the man for everything he had ever done. "After all, he's still your father," said the pastor. "God commands us to honor our parents. Do you wish to disobey the Lord?" She eventually agreed, hugged him, and then they drove him home to their new house. Screen fades to black. Text appears on screen, in quotes, "To God be the glory," end of quote. Roll credits. The end. Now, first of all, I want to acknowledge that it is possible for this to happen in real life. I sincerely believe so. However, there are 100 things wrong with this story. 100 reasons why this was poorly thought out entertainment. Again, I mean no disrespect to the writers out there who, in a bid to tell an authentic story, end up constructing narratives that eventually do more harm than good. This story was intended to teach its audience about forgiveness, which isn't a bad thing. However, it reinforces many other negatives in the process. In summary, a wife-beating, cheating pedophile kicks his family out to the streets and doesn't look back. And when it was time for his bad luck to catch up to him, the daughter he sexually molested and the wife that he kicked out of the house for a young abroad, with the help of a pastor, came to his rescue. This bad guy, like many others in Nollywood, tend to win in the end. Hashtag bad guys win. Let's not talk about the random fellow whose fortunes are now being enjoyed by strangers, or the homewrecker who has now moved on to a better life with a richer friend of the man, or the mother who saw her husband molest a daughter and did nothing, or the boss who hits on and eventually marries his new employee. In a lot of Nollywood stories, the person with the most money is the authoritative figure. When it was the dad, he ran things. When it was the boss, he ran things. When the girl inherited her husband's money, she was the one that was called on for forgiveness because only her opinion mattered. Hashtag, money is everything. In the same story, there's reinforcement of mysterious wealth. Wealth that did not come from hard work, but literally came from her begging her way to a stranger who decided to help her and then eventually willed his money to her. Hashtag, claim your miracle. In the story, an employable young lady chooses to roam the streets begging for money instead of finding a job to sustain herself and her mother. Hashtag, begging is an option. Of course, the main theme of the story is that you can be rich today, kick your family out, and become a beggar tomorrow. Or you can be kicked out by your rich father and end up a beggar, and then one day out of the blue and by some miracle inherit someone's million-dollar empire. Hashtag, nobody knows tomorrow. There's a lot of danger when a majority of the movies that are being made for public consumption carry these types of messages. Over time, it begins to shape societal ideologies and may eventually cause what used to be a rational, hardworking, morally upright culture to lose its way. This is one of the many reasons why developed societies are very careful about the kind of information that is fed to its people through entertainment. Some may argue that it inhibits creativity. I say a reasonable amount of moderation and gatekeeping is necessary. If Nollywood is able to recognize the power that it has and is able to become more deliberate with its storytelling, there is a huge opportunity for positive reinforcement of the values that we're losing at a rapid pace today. It could be one of the greatest tools at our disposal for nation rebuilding. Our understanding of what role each of us plays as citizens towards the greater good of the society is something we need to reteach. It's all about our mindsets and recognizing that no matter how far gone we think the population is, minds can be transformed to see and do things differently. I've heard many people suggest that the societal decay is so bad that if you replace the current leaders 1,000 times over with random citizens from the general population, that the results would be the same. What that tells me is that Nigeria's problems are beyond who is in office, but more about the poor habits and negative attitudes that we've all learned and had reinforced over the years. Movies are a reflection of a culture's reality, and if we choose to tell it like it is, we also have a unique opportunity to correct such ideologies by highlighting the negative consequences with our storytelling. Good stories with the right values and life lessons, told at the right time in someone's life, can change their outlook and shine a light that's bright enough to illuminate the way ahead on the map of life. We must go back to telling deliberate stories that are intended not only for entertainment, but for teaching the values that are desperately needed for the nation to change its current course. Our stories must begin to promote fairness, hard work, integrity, honesty, respect, discipline, compassion, accountability, selflessness, empathy, passion, responsibility, kindness, self-awareness, resilience, self-control, independence. I could go on. Nollywood is the one thing that connects all Nigerians besides music and football, and it has the potential to shift the mentality of the population. If only we can become more deliberate with the content that we feed ourselves and other African countries that look up to us. There's a reason why everyone who comes in contact with Hollywood believes America is the greatest country in the world. There's a reason why 17-year-olds voluntarily sign up to join the military in developed countries. There's a reason why citizens feel a sense of pride in being community builders and custodians. Being a teacher, a fireman, or a police officer is considered a thing of pride in developed countries. There's a reason for that. All nations must protect their citizens' sense of community and the sense of accountability to one another. We must teach and continue to reinforce the values that ensure that we feel a sense of responsibility to and for one another. A failure to do so is what results in the I before others mentality that we see today. As an influencer, it is your responsibility to ensure that you are a part of the solution and not the problem. I was once a musician, a socially conscious one at that, but I also see how some of my art could be perceived as having encouraged some of those negative ideas. I see it clearly now. I hope you all do too. I want to close this episode with a Adekunle Gold's song titled Work from his Gold album. Not only do I love this record, it is a good example of how art can be used to communicate messages that inspire nation building.
Pussycat no be tiger, monkey at the sea chimpanzee. Walk your body, oh.
Fit your body, oh. Walk you, oh. Walk you, oh.
Ore mi mura si she, oh.
Mura si she, walk you, oh. Walk you, oh.
Got your go to fit your body, oh.
Fit your body, walk you, oh. Walk you, oh.
You say you want expensive shit, but from a far away we see. You where you never am out. Oh, from a bad one, oh, brother. You go rock and run down. Body me double your solo. Respect yourself, oh.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Nigerian American. You can reach us by our email at nigerianamericanpodcast@gmail.com. Please feel free to share, subscribe, and comment. My name is LD.